Hey guys, what is going on? We are in the zone. I'm here as always with Giancarlo Aulino. And today we got to kick it off with last night's hockey night in Canada. Aulino, we saw the Edmonton Oilers taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Doesn't get any more offensive minded than those two teams, arguably two of Canada's teams this year. What were your thoughts on the game? We saw a lot happen in the game. We saw the incident with Tavares and Desharnais. We saw bunting and Evander Kane. Like, this was a much more aggressive game than I thought, but again, it came down to the star power. It came down to guys like Marner, Matthews, McDavid. Overall, Aulino, what were your thoughts on the game, and who do you think stood out to you the most in this one?
Yeah, this is a game that all hockey fans, if I'm even the network partner of the NHL, this is one I want on TV. Like, this is the one that you showcase that ESPN, TNT, and they delivered 7-4. This is a game that you had McDavid just showing out. You had Marner, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, like all the big guys coming in there and performing. This was a fun game to watch. Obviously, for the coach, it wasn't on both teams because they see all the goals going in. But if you're a fan and you're seeing this, this could might be a Stanley Cup final. Could be a preview if both these teams continue on this run. But I was impressed by both of them, and McDavid this year, just the kind of year he's having, I would give him the Hart Trophy right away, not waste anyone's time. And Marner, if you're looking at Leafs awards, he's definitely the MVP for the Leafs this year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. McDavid is on pace for 150. He's on pace for 65 goals. Like, the guy, just when you think he's not going to score in a game, he'll go around everybody in the neutral zone, fly by them, wait it out, and then go five-hole like he did last night. The guy just creates so many chances, man. Every single shift, he's a threat to get a point. Every single shift. Doesn't matter if you're going to double-team him. He finds a way to use his quick speed and just get around everybody. So we saw last night the Leafs, they were really struggling to guard him. I mean, we saw McCabe on him for most of the game. Just the foot speed, man. Giordano can't keep up. Guys like Brody can't keep up. And even Riley, probably our fastest D, he can't keep up either. So McDavid's a problem. This is, I was saying before the pod went live, Aulino, we've been talking about so many great seasons over the years. Matthews' season last year. Patrick Kane's in 2015. Kucherov in 18. Does this Connor McDavid season, Aulino, just top everybody's in the modern era? Because what we're seeing this guy do is crazy. He almost also had 50 and 50, and he's already at 128 points. It's simply remarkable what he's doing.
Yeah, it's one of those seasons where it puts those to shame, all those other guys, because he's at a pace right now where 160, even over 160 points is a possibility. And this is a guy who, a few years ago, he had a torn ACL. So imagine what he's capable of without that injury. Like, this is kind of like Gretzky type stuff for this era, and I think it's not going to be too far-fetched to see him go to past 160. I think he can set the bar of what some scorers can get in this era, and just the way he's able to score. And then some nights when he gets shut down, he comes back the next night with like 4 to 5 points. So he's probably among the guys in this league that can be that one player that carries a team, where you don't need the other guys. Like, if he's on one night, he can win it all himself. So if you're Edmonton, it's good to have, because Draisaitl, if he gets cold one night, which isn't rare, it's a rare thing to happen, but I think Edmonton right now should be confident with Draisaitl and especially McDavid on this run.
Yeah, and they were even talking about it on Hockey Night in Canada last night. Kelly Rudy and the guys were saying, we saw last year with Edmonton, they had Mike Smith in net and they went to the conference finals. Their defense last year was far from perfect. Darnell Nurse had times would not have the greatest games. You know, they had Tyson Barrie, who, again, not the greatest defenseman. He's a great offensive D, but doesn't necessarily play too well in his own zone. But now you get a guy like Ekholm, who the guy, he's gone to a Stanley Cup final before with Nashville. He knows exactly what it takes to win. You got Stuart Skinner, who Kelly Rudy was comparing him to kind of like a Jordan Binnington when he came in the league. If Jordan Binnington can win a cup with St. Louis, I think Stuart Skinner could be the guy for Edmonton if Edmonton really wants to go and win a Stanley Cup. Now, we look in the Eastern Conference, Alino, and it's loaded because the trade deadline, we saw Kane, we saw Meyer, we saw Boston improve, the Leafs again with O'Reilly getting better. But you look at this Western Conference, I think there are a couple teams that are slept on. I think Edmonton is one of those teams. McDavid, like you mentioned, he can get you 4 points any night. He can carry you to any series win. We saw it against LA when he did it in Game 7. We saw it against Calgary when he did it in Game 5. The guy is just clutch. And, of course, another team, Alino, that no one is really talking about, and they've been at the top of the standings, to me, is Dallas. I think Dallas is a team. They're big, strong. Jamie Benn has had a resurgence of a season. Robertson and Roope Hintz are no joke. And they got our boy Max Domi at the trade deadline, another acquisition I think that's kind of flying under the radar. So I know we got a lot of high praise here, Alino, for Edmonton, but what do you think about other teams in the Western Conference, specifically Dallas?
Yeah, Dallas too, when they went to that final, and Jamie Benn, he's a playoff type of guy, the way he plays. So for him to have this kind of regular season is going to give him more confidence in the playoffs, and I'm happy to see it. He's on a contract year two of that long-term deal that he obviously earned at the time, but in the last few years hasn't really lived up to. And there was always that talk, like, are they going to buy him out? Like, is this an unfortunate buyout for a guy that played that kind of style and caught up to him? And he's been able to adapt. And I think he's going to be a highly sought-after guy in free agency. He'll probably re-sign with Dallas if they make more improvements. It's going to be a shorter term deal, probably less money than what he'll get. Maybe Florida and all the other teams that want to make a run will offer. I think like $4 million is not too crazy to think about, but I think Dallas will be where he eventually re-signs, and good for him. I think he deserves it, and I think he could lead them still. I think he has a lot more seasons left in him, maybe 3 or 4, but it's going to come down to his contract. I think his contract is what people look at and think, oh, he's washed up. But if he's making what other guys are making, similar stats and goals, I think he's going to be a guy that still produces on the third line.
What do you think about guys, Alino, like Jason Robertson? Because, you know, you talk so much this year about Tage Thompson. And to me, he's probably the biggest surprise when you look at production for forwards. I think you look at Jason Robertson, he's right there. Last year he had 70-something points, and everyone's like, yeah, you know, that's probably as good as it's going to get with him. And the guy's on pace for almost 50 goals, like 90 points. Do you see, when it comes to the playoffs, Alino, now we saw last year Dallas-Calgary, that was a war. Those guys just physically beat the crap out of each other. Now, we know Colorado's a team that's been slept on because of the injury bug. Landeskog, they don't really know what his status is going to be going into the playoffs. But if you're any team in the West, Alina, do you want to be that team that faces Dallas? Because the more I look at this team, I think low-key, I think they might be the favorites right now, in my opinion, in the Western Conference. A little bit of a hot take, but I think Dallas might be the team to beat right now.
Yeah, and then that Domi trade too. They're a little scrappy bunch of grinders out there. So matchup-wise, I think they were smart at the deadline. They didn't go around and like overpay and try to get like the biggest score, like a Kane or whoever was available. They looked at a need, and Domi's had a pretty good year on a bad team. So I think that's a nice fit. I think they're going to just stick to the course. So if they get eliminated first or second round, I don't think they'll make too many changes. I think this offseason is going to be more of a retool, and I think they'll make more improvements going into next year. I think this team is early on in that rebuild that didn't last as long as they probably thought it would. So I think it's positive if you're a Dallas Stars fan and management.
Yeah, I think as well, you look at the like you said, there was a basically hints of a rebuild after they lost in the Cup final. They're like, oh, they're old. You don't necessarily know what you're going to get with Dallas. And then, bam, Roope Hintz develops, Robertson develops, Heiskanen develops, Ottinger develops, and they're right back there. So it's crazy to think that, you know, when you could get on a roll with your young players, it just changes the status of your team completely. But I want to talk about another team, Alino. A lot of rumors with this team, the Philadelphia Flyers. They just fired Chuck Fletcher. Daniel Briere, he's looking like the guy that might be the general manager there. Now, You know, they have some good guys. I mean, Couturier, he's been injured for the last year with a back injury. Ryan Ellis gets traded there, and it's like he doesn't want to play in Philly. Elino, if you're Philly and, you know, there's the Connor Bedard sweepstakes, they have Fantilli, who's going to be really good in this draft. Are you just fire sale? Like, is this a fire sale? Are you just trying to trade as many players as you can, or are you trying to maybe steer the ship with guys like Konechny and Carter Hart moving forward? Because there's been rumors that Carter Hart might be dealt, which I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, Philly loves changing their goaltending. Like,
too early.
way too early. Like, Burzgalov, Bobrovsky. Like, I remember when Bobrovsky got traded, I thought, like, what are you doing? And the guy ends up winning a Vezina after. Like, that's insane the way they give up on these guys and they end up flourishing elsewhere. So I think they need to be a long-term vision there with Briere. Like, he has to actually come in, meet with Torts, the kind of team they both want to have, find common ground, because if you're just going to throw in guys in the lineup and see what plans out, you're not going to have an identity. And I know Morgan Frost is a player that has a lot of upside. I'd like to see him get more of an opportunity. You have other guys there, but it's just like Carter Hart has even really been giving a fair chance. Like, he had a good season, and then it's like up and down, his confidence, who knows where it's at, especially as a young player. So they need an overhaul, I think. Maybe Briere coming in is a perfect change, like fresh blood in a management point of view. But I think at the draft, you got to look at your team and try to move up in the first round. If you're not going to get Bedard at number one, try to get somewhere where you can make a trade and get multiple first round picks. I think this draft might be a good one long term, where in a couple of years, you look at all the talent there in the league. Kind of like what it was when, like, 2018, 2019, where guys might develop a little later, but you're going to look back at it and go, okay, this draft was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to blame Nolan Patrick, but, like, since they drafted him, just the downfall of Philly has been real. Like, last year, Giroux, when he left, I was happy for him because he ended up, it was like a perfect thing. He played his 1,000th game, and then it's like, yeah, see you later. You're out of here. So he ended his Philly career playing dead on 1,000. I wish Mike Modano, it was, what, 1,500? He was like 1,499 or something. Couldn't get it because of Babcock. But, yeah, ever since Giroux got traded, I feel like this team has just kind of been a disaster. I mean, you know, you take the chance with getting Ryan Ellis. They got Tony DeAngelo in the offseason, which I think was a pretty smart move, but there's no progress anywhere. Provorov's a guy I think that's going to be dealt. I think Konechny, I think you can get a lot for him. Kevin Hayes, JVR is probably going to get bought out at some point. So that's a team next year. If I'm a fan of Philly, I think I'm a little more excited because you really don't know what your team's going to look like next year. And at the same time, it's frustrating, but it could also be a breath of fresh air. But I want to also move on to another team quickly. And this team has just been, they've been unreal all year. And it's Boston, man. Like, this team, they were down 2-0 yesterday. They come back, they score 3 unanswered in the third and win the game. Is this team, Alino, are they fit to win the cup? Or do you see this team doing what the Tampa Bay Lightning did in 2018, where, yeah, you could win 60 games, but when it comes down to the playoffs, just don't get it done? Because I'm looking at this Boston team. Yeah, obviously they have the Marchand, the Bergeron, the Krejci. If you look at their back end, it's inexperienced. And you look at Linus Ullmark, man, like, the guy doesn't have a lot of playoff experience. So are you worried if you're Boston fans here?
If I'm Boston fans, I'm confident. As everyone else who kind of hates that team for obvious reasons, I hope they do become that Tampa Bay team that ends up getting eliminated early and getting swept. So yeah, I hope Boston, they had a nice little regular season. I hope they get their nice regular season trophy. And looking forward to that first round matchup where hopefully we'll see them get swept in 4.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Sidney Crosby is the wild card and he just does what he always does and just absolutely kills the Bruins. But yeah, this team has been unreal all year. Pasternak's been a thing to watch. He just got extended 11.25, which I think is a steal. If the guy's going to put up 50 goals every year, that's a steal. What do you think, Alino, about the whole narrative, though, around the Bruins? Because, you know, you have Krejci, Bergeron, both of them are at the twilight of their careers. Do you think this is a season where we see maybe that motivates the boys a little more, knowing that it's their last probably season together? Or do you think it's more they got a new coach, a new system, they're just kind of testing things out and it's just working? Because I see so many guys on that team this year having career years, like Allmark, Zacha, who they got from New Jersey, Coyle, like there's just, DeBrusque, there's so many guys that are having career years. So what do you think it is with Boston, man? Do you think it's management? Do you think it's the experience? Because they're just firing on all cylinders all year, man.
Yeah, it's been like a nice culture change, I think, with management going down to the coach. Like when you have a coach that has all that experience and wins games with them and then they change it, you think it's going to maybe have a negative effect on the group and some of the veterans will go elsewhere and they'll go into rebuild mode. But they've been a lot better and set records now, becoming the first team or fastest team to get this mark. So I think right now it's going to be like a wait and see type of thing of how the playoffs go and see how some of their veteran players play and see at the draft whether they'll want to continue with it. Because now they know that regular season they're capable of going that far with them and have that success. But when it comes down to the playoffs, they're going to see can they still perform at that level for the extra, hopefully, 21 games to win a cup. So I think this playoff run is going to be a big question mark for the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, assume that it's an easy ride for them because they've lost like 8 games all year. But you look at the East, man, and New Jersey, I don't know if they can beat New York, but they're a team that's terrifying on the offensive end. The Rangers are literally on paper a juggernaut. Like Tarasenko, Kane, Zibanejad, Panarin, Kreider. That's your top six right there. Shesterkin, we saw last year what he was capable of doing when he gets hot in the playoffs. Truba, the guy just decks people. He's a disaster on the back end. So it's not going to be an easy ride for anybody in the Eastern Conference, whether you're Tampa, whether you're Toronto, whether you're the Rangers, whether you're Carolina. It's going to be a hard 21 games to get to the promised land. And who knows, man, even if one of those teams goes to the finals, you're probably going to have to face the biggest physical test, and that's Dallas or Colorado or even Edmonton. So it's going to be fun. I always love the playoffs. I think it's going to be one of those years where it's going to be a grind. It's going to be unpredictable. But, man, the way Boston has been all year, it's just it pisses me off. I don't like how good they've been. So hopefully they finally hit a cold streak. They haven't hit it all year. We'll see what happens come playoff time. But I want to end hockey, Alino, with the wild card race. It's looking very, very entertaining. We see Ovi. We see the Caps. We see Sandin. The guy's looking like a superstar on Washington. You got the Islanders battling, the Penguins battling, Ottawa, Buffalo. At the end of it all, you know, only 2 of the 5 teams make it. Who do you think those 2 teams are going to be?
It's still tough. I think it's too close to call still. Like, these guys could get hot at the right time, and it's hard to count out Ovi right now. But, man, I don't know. I think if Washington figures it out, I think they could be it. Kemper is a Stanley Cup winning goaltender. Ovi is still at his age, capable of scoring goals. I'll go Washington on that.
Nice. I think I really want to see Washington Pittsburgh. It's not a normal playoffs without Pittsburgh and Washington. I think the Islanders, it's cool to see what they've done after the season they had last year, where it was kind of like, are we fire sale? Are we trading Lee? Are we trading Nelson? Are we trading all these guys? And now they're having career years. Barzal, to me, Alino, is just not looking impressive at all the last 2 years. I don't know if it's the coaching, but they got rid of Trotz. I don't really know what it is, man. Like, is it the coaching with Barzal? Because the guy had 85 points in his rookie year, and since then he can't get over 70. He's not that good in his own zone defensively. So I think, you know, Barzal to me is a guy that has to step up if this team wants to make the playoffs. Bo Horvat, they risked a lot to get him. They got rid of Atu Ratti, who I think could be a prized possession. They got rid of Beauvillier. I think even like you look at Ottawa, they get Chychrun. They go all in here. They need to make the playoffs. They need to do some damage here. But they don't have a goalie, man. Like, Mad Sogard and these young rookie goalies for Ottawa. I don't know if it's going to cut it for them, but Buffalo as well, man. This team can score goals. They can own you any night. It's going to be a fun one. I think I got to go with Pittsburgh, and I got to go with Washington. I think those two teams, if they make it, and hey, Carolina, you face Pittsburgh, good luck. It's going to be a tough one because they're going to be going after Jordan Staal. We all know that little that little rivalry there between Jordan Staal and the Pittsburgh Penguins. So that's it for hockey. It was a really good talking about that. Now we got to quickly move on to basketball because there's just so much going on in the NBA right now. We saw last night Steph Curry, what he did to Milwaukee. Guy's unreal. We see what's going on with the Grizzlies. I want to start it there. Alino, what are your thoughts on this team? We all know that they're the supervillains of the NBA. We see Dylan Brooks every game just chirping anybody he can. And of course the whole Ja Morant situation. What do you think about Memphis? Is this the downfall of Memphis, or do you think this is just a distraction for them to come out in the playoffs and fool a couple teams?
Yeah, I think this is a huge distraction. Like, I don't know, maybe it's like one of those situations where it's a young team, and that's what happens. You have too many young players together. Adams is there as a veteran guy, but maybe this is going to be something where management and the offseason are going to look at more veterans to come in and just to be in the room. If somebody wants to go on IG Live, they'll probably tell them, you know what, this is not a good idea. And if there's a lot more veterans than just one saying that's not a good idea, maybe they'll all, you know, grow up a little bit and decide, yeah, that's probably, you're right. We'll keep sending you those private messages to each other. But I just think they need more veterans. Like, this is an incredible group. Like, Ja Morant's an unbelievable player. And I just think that this team is capable of being that top seed. They've shown it all year. I just think they need a couple more veterans. That's all. That's the only issue I have with them.
Yeah, I mean, their core is, what, 24 years old? Like, you have Jaren Jackson, you got Brooks, you got Ja Morant, you got Brandon Clark. These guys are all young guys, and sometimes the immaturity does outweigh the skill of the game, and we've seen it here with this team. I think when you look at the other side of things and you look at a team like Denver and how they've kind of restructured and redeveloped the chemistry there with, you know, you get Aaron Gordon, who to me is still very undervalued. He averages about 16 a game. Not the most polished defender, but he gets the job done as much as he can. Jamal Murray is looking like he's not the same guy from the bubble, obviously, but he's a guy that you can rely on for secondary scoring. Jokic might win 3 straight MVPs. So I like the way Denver is. I think they're a really, really good example of, you know, being humble, you know, just putting the work in and the results come. They're the first seed. They've been the first seed since the Pelicans just kind of fucked off, because the Pelicans were in first for a long time. Your boy Zion was carrying it, and then another unknown injury that I don't know what the hell's going on with him. Brandon Ingram missed a lot of time. Alvarado's now hurt. JV, our boy, has been like the only consistent guy playing, him and CJ McCollum. You look at the LA Lakers, man, this is a team where LeBron now he's out, I think, another 2 weeks, but AD has been unreal when he's playing. Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell's looking good. Vanderbilt, they have the best defensive rating, you know, since the deadline. Do you see the Lakers doing damage if they make the playoffs, or are you still rolling with the Clippers? Because the Clippers, man, they've been on a slide.
Yeah, they've been sliding since the Westbrook acquisition, unfortunately. I thought it'd be a perfect fit, but yeah. It's had its ups and downs, but I think Kawhi is going to turn that around in the playoffs. Like, I've seen him play a lot more consistently recently, so that's a good sign for the Clippers that he's going to be getting his reps in before the playoffs. So that could be a good sign for even the players around him, that they'll be around him more, play more with him, and get a feel of what he can do, what his limitations are, get chemistry building. So with Paul George and him together, if they can continue scoring and figure out a way to get Russell Westbrook involved and not be a scapegoat, the poor guy, I think this could be their year, but I just hope that Westbrook doesn't play himself out of another situation. That would be really unfortunate.
Hey, at least he's on a vet minimum or whatever the hell it is. He's not getting paid much, but we talk a lot about the same teams basically being contenders. Like, we talk about Golden State, we talk about the Lakers, we talk about the Clippers. Do you see Denver being that team, Alina, where they, if, now with the KD injury and the chemistry issues potentially going into the playoffs, do you see Denver making any noise? Because again, man, they've been in first for majority of the year. No one still talks about them as much as maybe we should. Do you think Denver has it in them to go to a final, or do you still think with the experience in the West with guys like Curry and LeBron and Kawhi, do you still think you favor them? Because the more that I watch Denver, man, this is a team that I think they have it in them to go to a final.
Yeah, I think they have it in them, especially with a guy like Jokic. I think it helps things a lot. But when you're looking at all those other teams, like Kawhi, proven winner, Paul George has had some success when he was in Indiana and then OKC, and he knows what it takes to win in the playoffs. And surrounding some of those guys with Kawhi, like Norm Powell, I think the Clippers I would favor, but Jokic is capable of carrying the team. He just needs guys around him to score consistently for them to have success. But if you got Jokic looking at you on the other side of the court, that obviously helps things for the Denver Nuggets.
What do you think about the East, man? Like, we got Milwaukee, to me right now, might be the best team there. I think they're a little better than Boston right now, but I still have Boston going to the finals. I think that's the team where you look at Marcus Smart, love him or hate him, he's a guy you need in the playoffs. Grant Williams, same thing, love him or hate him, you need him in the playoffs. Big Al, the Pal Horford's a guy that you just can't sleep on. Robert Williams has had his injuries, but he's unreal defensively. And then you got the two-headed monster, Tatum and Brown. Those guys, they could put 50 on you any other game, and I'm not surprised. So, you know, we see Miami doing a little better recently. We see the Knicks actually stringing some wins together. But is it still between Milwaukee and Boston at this point, Alino?
Yeah, I think a safe bet. The Raptors obviously would be a nice story, but they can't maintain leads late, and I think that's what's missing. Even though they made an improvement there with Poeltl, I think we're another offseason away from really getting a better roster and a team that's capable of making that next step again. But right now, I think the Celtics and Bucks, I think the Bucks need Middleton to step up if they're going to be successful. But I would favor the Celtics. And you look at the West too, like, Phoenix gets KD, he gets injured again, so he's going to be a question mark. And if you can get that out of the way, then you're looking at maybe Dallas with Kyrie and Doncic. So if you're going to replicate that in the East, who has a best shot, more complete team? Boston probably has the most complete team. And then you look at Milwaukee, what they're able to do, I think those two would be probably a final where you can see if they're an Eastern Conference team, you would actually favor them in a couple games.
Yeah, like even last year, I thought Boston was better than Golden State going into the final. I just think they had the harder go around. They had to face Brooklyn. They had to face Milwaukee. Like, they were beat up, the Celtics. So, but then again, Jason Tatum, what we saw, even like, dude, look at the All-Star game this year. He broke the record. This is a straight-up scorer. He's not the most polished defender, but he could still carry you any given time in the fourth quarter. Jaylen Brown is the same type of guy. They picked up Malcolm Brogdon, who I think had no business going to Boston, but here we are. So Boston, to me, is by far, I think, the most complete team. You look at what Brook Lopez has been able to do in Milwaukee, definitely helps. Giannis is incredible, but like you said it perfectly, Middleton is, I think, the guy there where he has to step up. If he doesn't step up, good luck, because Middleton's going to have to shut down Jaylen Brown. I don't know if he can do it. You're going to have probably Al Horford on Giannis, and we saw last year he did a phenomenal job. They would have probably Al Horford and Robert Williams just swarming Giannis any chance they can. So at this point in time, Alino, who would be the guy guarding Tatum? It's probably Jrue Holiday in a mismatch, and I don't really know if they can really do it. So I do love Giannis. I love him so much. I think he's the modern face of this league, at least right now, until Doncic can win a couple MVPs. But I think right now, I think Boston is the scariest team in the Eastern Conference. And I want to quickly ask you, Ali, because this guy has not gotten love the last 3 years. He's been an MVP finalist the last two. Joel Embiid, do you think he could really do anything with this Philly team? Because we see some nights the pick and roll with him and Harden, it's just immaculate. Maxey's kind of taken a step back in terms of scoring, but can you see Philly upset a team like Boston? Because I think Joel Embiid, I think he's proven more than ever in his career right now.
Yeah, I think if they're healthy, they can. And if Harden is draining shots more consistently, I would put Philly in the mix there of teams that could get out of the East. But when you look at the talent pool there of some of the other teams, it's going to be like, who's going to be the more well-rounded team that could adjust? And if you're Philly, it's going to really come down to Embiid and if Harden's hot for them to have success, because they trade a lot of their depth away. And you look at a team like Brooklyn, who improved a lot defensively now. Like, what are they going to be if they make it in? So I think there's too many question marks in the East where a lot of people might see them as being a more open conference compared to the West, where you know all those teams can make a run. So it's going to be interesting to see the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for sure. And I know there's Trae Young trade rumors, so it's going to be a busy offseason. There's going to be another superstar on the way out. But, you know, I want to quickly now just go on to WWE. We got to talk about the buildup for WrestleMania. Alino, you gotta help me understand why we're getting Bobby Lashley and Bray Wyatt, and we're getting Omos and Lesnar, because everything else for this card is great, man. I'm excited for almost every other match, but you get these two in a singles match, and it's hard for me to get behind it. For me, it's hard to even market and, you know, promote at this point. Like, what are your thoughts on this, on these two matches? I know you're a big Lashley guy. You're a big Lesnar guy. Do you see a guy like a Lashley really benefiting from facing Bray Wyatt after the year he's had? Or I guess I'll start with that feud with Wyatt and Lashley. Do you think, like, is this a win-win? Is this a lose-lose? Like, to me, this doesn't look beneficial for either guy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it is beneficial. I don't know what the whole deal is with their character, like what they're going to be building here, what kind of match they're even going in, because there's a lot of question marks right now. But with Uncle Howdy getting in the mix after he was viewed as this guy controlling Bray Wyatt, and now it's just a henchman, I don't know what they're going to do with that. So this could either be a disaster or it could be a surprise of WrestleMania. And the way it's going now, it's unfortunately looking like it could be a disaster.
I mean, we talk all the time about what the expectation is for a Bray match. Is it going to be a cinematic performance? Is it going to be a match like it was when he faced LA Knight? What do you think benefits Lashley most? Do you want to see him maybe go out of his toolbox and do a cinematic match? Or do you think it's just better off that they have maybe like a 10-minute fast-paced, hard-hitting match? Because I don't want to really see Lashley, as great as he's been for the last year and a half, Alino, I don't want to see him do a cinematic match here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one where, like, it could come off good if they do a cinematic match. It's just at WrestleMania with a live crowd and everything going on. Like, will it come off better on TV with the fans there? Like, will they like it if they're live and they see a cinematic match just take over the whole production, basically, and it's serving as this, they're watching it on the screen and like not knowing what's going on. Will they be even invested? Will they care about the outcome? Like, I don't know how they're going to book this in a way to benefit both guys. But even when this was announced as an idea, I thought it's too soon for it. They should have had Bray Wyatt's group or whatever they're planning to do with it out by now. And they could have done something where it continues to build more and more momentum. But right now it's like they're throwing Lashley in the mix and hoping to get something out of it that I don't think is going to resonate well.
No, it's definitely not going to resonate well, man. And I think when you look back at it, let's say August comes around and none of these guys are doing anything, I'm going to specifically blame this WrestleMania match, because You know, when you talk about guys that really get momentum going, I think it's due to the fact that you get a WrestleMania win, and then maybe creative in the back kind of looks at that performance and says, oh shit, like, you know what? We'll push him a bit. He had a great WrestleMania this year. I don't know if this is going to be the case for either guy here. I know if Roman Reigns does drop the belts, we will talk about that match maybe in a couple minutes. But if that scenario does end up happening, they split both belts on one brand, do you see Lashley or Wyatt being the guy to take it? Because they do have the star power to do it, but it's a lot of organic building again, I think, to get them to that level again. Because I don't know what the hell they're doing here. I thought they were doing a phenomenal job with Lashley, Lesnar, and then the DQ finish at the Chamber, and then now this just kind of, to me, is throwing both characters off completely.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what they're doing with Bray and his long-term development, his long-term plan, but hopefully it doesn't ruin Lashley's momentum, because this guy, where he was 3 years ago and where he is now, like,
oh, beautiful.
He completely changed everything and became a big star. So hopefully it doesn't ruin his momentum.
And Bray Wyatt, man, he came back, what was it, November? It's been a long time now. He's been back for a while, and he's not done much. He had the feud with LA Knight that dragged on forever, and it seems like LA Knight benefited more than Bray Wyatt at the end of the day. So I remember we were talking about it during that feud, you know, can LA Knight benefit? Absolutely. You're going up against Bray Wyatt, guy who was, you know, touted as the Fiend and touted as one of those guys that can, you know, be one of the biggest flag bearers for this company. And bam, look at LA Knight now. He's cutting unreal promos. Fans want to see him every single week compete for a title. It's not a Hollywood Mania without LA Knight. So I guess this will make me transition to LA Knight, man. Like, do you see him getting a WrestleMania match here? I see the fans are starting to get behind him. He's got so much passion in his promos. I think it's about damn time we get LA Knight a meaningful match at Mania.
Yeah, I think we will and we should, because like all the pops he's getting every week, like you can see the fans get up as soon as his music hits and they're all into his promos, like the catchphrases and everything. I would like to see it. Like another one, they could do it like a last minute thing where he has a match, like announced the day of, where he's just in the ring and cuts a promo saying you can't have this kind of WrestleMania without LA Knight. And then somebody comes out to face him. So I think that's probably more likely than them just like announcing a match 3 weeks out. So I think we'll see a last minute match booked for the event with LA Knight.
I love it. Absolutely. I think that has to be the case. But, you know, we did just hear, Alino, that the first inductee into this year's Hall of Fame is the luchador, Rey Mysterio. Now, Dominic, that little ungrateful kid. Damn it. Guy comes out, says, you know how many birthdays, you know how many soccer games you missed? Just to have a Hall of Fame career, unacceptable. Can't do it. So now it looks like we might be getting, I mean, it's been teased for like almost a year now, Rey Mysterio versus Dominic Mysterio at WrestleMania. Is this the match, Alino, that if you're Rey, you go out, you lose to your son and call it a career? Or do you think they're just teasing it just for it to not happen here? Because it's really benefiting Dominic and his heel heat. He's got more heat than I think almost anybody at the moment. But what do you think Rey's going to do here?
This is going to be the pop he gets when he finally beats the shit out of that kid. It's going to be worthy of that Hall of Fame induction. So I want to see Rey finally just embrace it, go all in, and be invested in this. I just think Dominic, like every week, the promos he's cutting where he was saying that Eddie Guerrero should have won the match and it's really Eddie's son, like just lean into that more, interrupt him when he got announced for the Hall of Fame, telling him he doesn't even deserve it. Like, I think this match is going to be fitting of like night two, night one. Just look at this, the look he's giving him, that promo. Like, this is reaching its boiling point. They've done everything properly here, and I think they're going to deliver at WrestleMania.
But again, we talk about the end result, Alino. Do you have Rey winning? Because again, it is like his big Hall of Fame WrestleMania. Or do you think obviously he's going to give the win to his son to kind of garner more heat and really kickstart his singles career.
I think they could go in both directions. Like, they can even get more than one match out of it. Like, maybe Dominic wins the first one and Ray, like, comes out that he held off a bit. He didn't want to do anything more. And then they have a rematch. So I think you can get more than one match. I wouldn't be surprised if they go in that direction where they get two matches out of it. But if this extends to Dominic's career, it furthers him along and fans get more of an appreciation for him, I think there's only positive outcomes that can come out of this.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those matches where we're going to look back on it in a couple of years and say, oh, you remember that match with Ray and Dominic? Yeah, that was a pretty good match, honestly. It was something that the build was unreal and then the match delivered. So there's so many times, Alina, where, I mean, we talk about it all the time with, like, you know, the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, the build of that Mania, and that match was garbage. There's just so many matches where you look at the builds and then it just doesn't deliver. Even the LA Knight, Bray Wyatt feud, like, it kind of, the match was really underwhelming for me. But I think in this case with Ray and Dom, you know, so many backstage segments, so many clashes, you know, he's a part of the Judgment Day, he's a part of a faction. I think this is going to be a really, really good kickstart to Dominic, I think, as in terms of, you know, getting that confidence as a singles guy. I think he's going to start stringing some wins together. I wouldn't be surprised, Alino, if he's in a Money in the Bank and he's a very prominent role in that match, maybe in a year or two. So I love this. I think this just benefits both guys. It's a great way to end it for Ray's career, and it's a great way to start it for Dominic's career. So perfect match there. But then, of course, we got another similar situation there where we saw on Raw John Cena come back. And, you know, this again, of course, it was rumored for a long time, but we weren't really sure if John Cena had, you know, the schedule capabilities to come back. And it looks like now finally we're going to get John Cena come back, take on Austin Theory for the United States title. I did see a couple things online, Alino, where some fans are kind of open to seeing Cena win. Theory not necessarily needing the win right now, but I think at this point in time, John Cena hasn't really had a singles win. I think it was in like 5 or 6 years. Do you see John Cena getting the win here, or do you think this is just another impressive outcome for Austin Theory in his young career?
Yeah, I'd like to see Austin Theory get the win. You saw last year, like, it clearly they had high hopes for him because he was involved with Vince McMahon, and then they made him or they booked him in that match with Pat McAfee and everything that went in on after that, where he wins some Money in the Bank. And obviously it didn't go his way there, but he eventually turned it around and his character. And now we see him in a program with John Cena, and Cena's WrestleMania return is against Austin Theory, an up and comer. So I think if Cena wins the match, we can see him do that open challenge thing that he usually does on Raw. And that would be a way for a debuting, like, whoever comes in, like a Jay White or Nick Aldis, like some big signing to WWE. And then you have Austin Theory cost Cena the match and they get a rematch for Backlash. So I got Theory an outcome here. I think he eventually gets a win. If it's not the first match, I think he costs Cena the title and beats him in the rematch.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I heard that, you know, there's obviously the outcome of Cena putting a young talent over and Theory retaining his United States title and continuing his run. But there's another case in point where John Cena coming back for WrestleMania is so, so hyped that I don't think the fans would be opposed to him actually winning the match. I think it would actually get a bigger pop than people anticipate. I know there's guys like me and you probably that, you know, we might groan a bit if Cena were to maybe win, and he's not burying Theory by any means. Cena's not coming back and he's not going to be here for a year straight, where Theory again is probably going to be like one of the workhorses of 2023. So I think this is a perfect win-win scenario here. I think, you know, Theory loses, doesn't have much to lose. You know, he could definitely bounce back. And like you mentioned, Cena's known for the open challenges. He can cost them, and we can see maybe Theory sneak his way into another U.S. title opportunity, or you could have, again, Theory retain and just continue to run his mouth, and then you can maybe elevate another guy, maybe a guy that hasn't really been televised as much as maybe like a, a Ricochet maybe go off against Theory, something like that for a bit. So there are a lot of possibilities here, Alino. I think they've done these two feuds specifically perfectly with Theory and Cena and Dom and Rey. And it's a shame because you look at guys like Lashley and Wyatt and Lesnar and Omos, and it's almost like they did the exact opposite where there's no real build to it. It's just these, I mean, Omos to me doesn't have any star power, but you know, Lesnar has all the star power in the world. He beat the streak. We know how great Lesnar, his legacy, his everything that he's put together on a resume. He's one of the greatest to ever do it. So I guess this will make me transition to that match. I know we love Lesnar over the years. We love him and we hate him, especially during that Universal run when he was not even there. Do you see almost putting up a fight, or do you think this is more or less maybe a send-off for Brock to say, hey, I'm one of the most dominant guys of all time. You can't touch me. It's going to be a 2 minute, one F5, and that's it.
I don't blame Lesnar for turning down the Bray Wyatt match with everything that's been going on with the Lashley thing. So I'm actually okay with this. If he sees something in Omos, like we saw Omos go his debut teaming with AJ, they beat the New Day. And last year he's facing Bobby Lashley, former champ. And now this year he's facing Brock. So there's only one way he's going, and that's to the main event scene, it looks like. Next year we'll probably see him win the Royal Rumble and go on main event WrestleMania at this point. But I'm going to make a bold prediction here. This match is going to be low-key one of the show stealers, because I think Brock is going to really show that Omos is a guy they have a lot of hopes for, and he's going to make him look good. He's going to win, but I don't think it's going to be with an F5. I think Brock is going to hit a shooting star press.
If he hits a shooting star press on a guy like Omos, he's breaking a couple ribs, man. That's gonna hurt.
No, I think it's going to be like a 5 minute. We'll see Omos thrown through a barricade or something. Lesnar like struggle to hit a F5, and I think he'll just hit him with the F5 at the end. Like, it's going to be a 5 minute match that serves its purpose, and I think no one's going to be like negatively affected. Like, almost after this match, he's probably going to have 90% of the offense and get hit with an F5, and maybe they'll lead to Lashley Lesnar again. But yeah, I don't think this is going to be something where it's going to be a 15-minute Goldberg Lesnar WrestleMania 20 type match.
No. That, I remember when that match happened. I think I texted you. I was like, that was the best case scenario with that match. Like, that match was as good as it could have been. Like, remember when Goldberg went for the spear and he leaped that was beautiful. That was just perfect. So, I mean, if they can do something like this with Omos, like, yeah, you know, you make him get offense. It's like a 5 minute sprint. No harm, no foul. I think, you know, Lesnar, I think, I don't want to say he's done with WWE, but I feel like now he's what, like 46, 47. I think he's at a point now where maybe you think this might be his last Mania? Like, I don't know. I feel like he's always been more of a SummerSlam guy. Like, SummerSlam, I think, is like his coming out and like, I'm in a main event SummerSlam. Do you see him being part of maybe you do like a Lashley Lesnar at SummerSlam, or do you think this might be it for him? Because I have seen some rumors out there where this is kind of like his twilight as well.
Yeah, I'm not buying into those. I think he's going to go wherever the bag is. And it's just a negotiation tactic on his part. This is a smart guy. He's going to always get more money the next contract out. So I think it's a leverage play to say, oh, maybe I'm done. And then AEW, Tony Khan will come in and bring up the value and say, oh, you know, if you reconsider, then he'll go back to WWE and say, this is what they're going to offer. I'd like to stay here, and they'll match it. So I think Lesnar will be back. I think he's actually been working like full time almost, because he seems to be always coming out on Raw, SmackDown sometimes. I remember last year he was working like a couple pay-per-views, and then he works Raw and SmackDown leading up. So he's going to probably scale down the appearances. I think we'll see something similar to like his first run in 2019 when he was working with Drew, where he'll be involved in that program, and then we won't see him for 4 months later. So I think he'll be an attraction for like the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and then like Survivor Series, debatable, and probably end the year. So like, I don't think we'll see him too often as we have the last 2 years, but I think he re-signed something where he's going to still be that main event attraction.
Now, to end the pod, I just want to quickly talk about, I guess we could quickly talk about what we believe the main event should be on night one. I think it's going to be KO and Zayn versus the Usos. I think that's the most appropriate. Do you see this being, you know, beneficial, though? Like, with the whole storytelling, the way everything has gone, do you think this is the big finale here, or do you think we're still in for a Jey Uso Roman Reigns or a Sami Zayn Roman Reigns down the line? Because, you know, like, the Usos have done a phenomenal job just, you know, implementing their stuff in the story, and Kevin Owens still not, you know, taking Sami back. It's a little bit intriguing, but do you have this main eventing night one, and do you think this is the match that fans are going to look at it and say, yeah, this is a good enough payoff for the story?
Yeah, I think this should main event night one. Like, I know they're probably going to push for Charlotte and Rhea Ripley, but storyline-wise, this is the strongest one. I think they all deserve it, especially Jey Uso and Sami Zayn, what they've been able to do the last year, and all the turns that this whole storyline has, like, built and developed since then. So I think Kevin Owens, back-to-back night one main events, good for him, good Canadian kid. And if they do win the titles, I think you could still do something there with Jey Uso and Roman, where maybe Roman and Jey, not having a title, they start to go back and forth with each other, brings a Rock into it, and then that's when they all turn on the Rock, and we'll see again Jey Uso, where you think that his loyalty is not with Roman anymore. They turn everything around. So I think that's another turn in this whole bloodline angle, where we're going to think there's a breakup happening, but I think they're all eventually going to turn on the Rock when he eventually comes back, and that's what will lead to next year's main event.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've been waiting for 2 years for sure, with the Rock and Roman Reigns, and I thought it would have happened this year, but, you know, you get the whole Cody Rhodes story, and I think it's absolute, dude, their promos have been unbelievable, you know, with Heyman and Rhodes and Rhodes and Roman. I think it's been amazing. I think fans are actually, call me crazy, Alino, I remember it was like a month ago when he won, and we're talking about, oh, you know, they put themselves in a corner with Sammy not being in the main event. I think they've done a phenomenal job with Cody Rhodes. I think a lot of fans are behind the idea of him dethroning Roman. I don't know if he's necessarily the right guy to do it, but you implement the story of his late great father with how great he saw Roman and as the it factor. And I think this is going to be a phenomenal match, man. I think this actually might be match of the night. And when you have the main event of WrestleMania being match of the night, it only makes the whole show that much better. So I think regardless, if Cody Rhodes is the right guy to win it, I'm still not certain because Roman's beaten everybody. But what are your thoughts on this one? I think the build for this has just been immaculate. I think it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, and then Roman with the evil line there, like all the knowledge he passed on. It's like, oh yeah, we had great conversations. You know what he ever said about you, Cody? Oh, nothing. Like, he never existed. Just his promos have been next level, and I think we're gonna see a lot more. I think there's more to this story where we're seeing how ruthless WWE could be here, because I think this could be a way of negotiating with Kenny Omega. I think that's who they have their eyes on, and another EVP that they could steal away from their competition to show, like, oh, look, one of your other EVPs just won the world title in the main event and dethroned our most dominant champion of this modern era. Why don't you come over here to dump that little TNT, TBS little product and come over to WWE. I think they're trying to show them that we have plans for you too if you decide, give us a try. So I think that we're seeing how ruthless these little business tactics could be here. And I think WWE, that's where they have their eyes on. I think Kenny Omega, they can add him into the company and have him maybe feud with Cody next year. I think this would be a win-win for everybody.
I love it. I think Cody Rhodes is winning as well. I don't know. I said to you, I could see him turning heel like as soon as the next night. I don't think it's happening now, just based on he's coming out and greeting Cena. He's coming out and helping Sammy. And it's like, this guy's the number one babyface right now. They're grooming him to be the number one babyface in the company. The thing is, Alino, with how well Roman's run has been, does it just does anybody winning the title at this point hurt their reign and their credibility? Because it's just been flawless with Roman. So let's say Cody wins, loses it at SummerSlam to whoever. Like, people are going to look back at the WrestleMania match and be like, as good as it was, did it really serve its purpose for 3 month reign? Because Roman had it for 3 years. So it's one of those where when I say they put themselves in a corner, I think that's what I mean, where like whoever beats Roman Reigns for the titles, they got a lot of pressure on them to carry it as Roman did. So we got to see. Roman is well deserving of a vacation, of a break. He's been doing it for 3 straight years. One of the most impressive runs I can remember, honestly, Aldino. Like, I've watched so much wrestling in my life. I don't think anybody's done what Roman's done. So Cody's going to probably dethrone him here. I'm not really upset about it. I think he's going to be motivated after what he saw last year, what he did with Seth at Mania. I think he wants to top it. So I think it's going to be a match of the night, in my honest opinion. But want to end the podcast talking about the IC title. We got Gunther. It looked like they did the Fatal 4-Way. It looked like, you know, they were going to have a singles match, but we saw Drew and Sheamus pin LA Knight and Thing at the same time. Do you see this being a triple threat? And out of those three, do you see this being match of the night? And who do you think's winning this? I think Gunther might retain, but I want to see Sheamus get it done.
Yeah, this is going to be a strong contender for match of the night. And I'll still go with Sheamus winning. This is going to be a triple threat where we see Sheamus and Drew go at it at times. And I think that's what they're going to do to protect Gunther. I think Sheamus is going to pin Drew. Like, maybe Gunther, he gets taken out a bit. Drew hits the kick on, he hits a Claymore kick on Gunther, take him out. But I think Sheamus is going to win it with hitting the bro kick on Drew. And maybe he turns heel down the line and those two feud. But I think that would be a perfect way. Get Sheamus the IC title at WrestleMania. He deserves it. I think the fans wanted that at Clash of the Castle. And
oh, yeah.
I'm saving it for this moment. I think it'd be something where he deserves it at this point of his career.
I love it. I think I agree with you. I think Cody and Roman, and I think this triple threat would be the two matches that I think are going to deliver. I think the women's matches also have the possibility. I don't know necessarily with Asuka and Bianca. I mean, like, they're both unreal in the ring, but I don't know if they're going to give them the minutes. But I do think, Aldino, like, you talk about Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. If they can give them minutes, this could be a banger. So probably won't be better than Bianca and Becky last year, because that was unbelievable last year, but it's going to be a good Mania, man. We do have a couple clunkers, but can't be perfect, right? So with that being said, this is episode 210 today. We talked a lot about WrestleMania. Make sure you guys watch it April 1st. Talked a little bit about the NBA and the playoffs. And, of course, we have to always talk about our Leafs and how they're going to be going into the playoffs. So that being said, this is episode 210. Chris Martelli, Giancarlo Aldino, signing out.